And welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Carla Bussard, our guest this hour. Overcoming obstacles to belief in God, our topic. Carlo is the author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. How are you, Carlo?
Hey, Si, I'm doing all right, buddy.
And the family as well? Everybody's okay?
Yeah, we're doing fine, man. We're hunkering down and keeping clean, trying to practice our social distancing as best we can. But so far, so good, brother.
Well, I what I know of you is that one of your favorite things to do is to study. So
there's really nothing different from my perspective.
I guess you practice social distancing all the time.
Indeed, I do, friend. Indeed, I do. So, yeah. So, it's not too different for us because we homeschool. So it's sort of a daily routine for us to be in the house. Of course, the only difference is that, you know, in the afternoon, normally my wife takes the kids out on some sort of adventure to the library or somewhere in town just to get out the house. So other than not being able to do that, life is pretty much normal and just hoping and praying that we can preserve the toilet paper we have for as long as we can.
I was just talking with Trent about that last hour. I do not understand the toilet paper aspect of this whole thing. All the rest of it seems fairly clear to me. I don't understand the whole toilet paper side of it. But there's no toilet paper
in the stores, man, you need to have it in the house.
I know, but the panic around it. How did that even get? Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of other stuff in the stores. Overcoming obstacles to belief in God this hour.
Right.
If you're a person who is has such obstacles yourself, or knows someone that you would like to help over those obstacles, maybe you're dialoguing with atheists. Or maybe you're an agnostic person yourself and you've kind of suspended judgment on whether or not God exists, whatever may be the case in your situation. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. As I said, Carlo has a book called Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. One whole section of the book is just about this topic that we're discussing today. He may even give away a few copies this hour. I don't know. 888-318-7884. Carlo, it seems to me that if I live, say, in the year 1500, all around me, smart and reasonable people, as a matter of fact, the kind of most important people in the culture,
right,
are believing in God.
Yeah.
And today I look around and I say, look, there's all these very smart people. And some of the makers of culture, a whole bunch of them, and they don't seem to be believing in God. So maybe, what am I supposed to make of that? Like, how can so many smart and apparently reasonable people not be believing in God, but I'm supposed to?
Yeah, well, it seems as if there are two challenges there, or two obstacles that I can identify. One, the first you mentioned, or I thought you were going in the direction of, was the idea that, well, we're just sort of socially conditioned to believe in God. And then the second obstacle being, well, it seems as if only smart people don't believe in God. So if I want to be smart and I want to be intellectually responsible, well, then I need to give up on this whole God thing and embrace atheism, or at least agnosticism, right? So if those are the two obstacles, well, then I think we can challenge, we can help people overcome the first obstacle, the idea of that belief in God is socially conditioned. I think the problem with that challenge is that it simply skirts around or bypasses the ultimate question, and that is, does God exist? Because notice the challenge tries to offer an explanation for one's belief in God. So maybe someone does believe in God due to their social conditioning, but that still doesn't get to the question, does God exist? And then secondly, there may be some people who will believe based upon social conditioning, but others don't, because some people believe in God based upon the reasonable arguments for God. In fact, some even go further, I would say, and not only believe that God exists, but would claim they know God exists because they've worked through some of the philosophical arguments that the premises can be reduced to first principles, which gives demonstrative knowledge versus probable knowledge. So I think we have to take a step back and say, well, just first, you might be explaining belief, but that doesn't answer the question, does God exist? So you're still not out of the dilemma, you know, concerning God's existence. And secondly, some people may be socially conditioned in their belief, but others may not. And so I would have to challenge the person and say, well, how do you know everybody is socially conditioned? In fact, when you look at history and the great minds of Thomas Aquinas, etc., they weren't merely socially conditioned in their belief for God. They had good reason to believe in God. And so too today, with Christian apologists and philosophers who go through it, and even the person who's not the philosopher, you know, the little grandma who never studied, opened a philosophy or theology book in her life, she believes that God exists, and she may have good reasons to do so. They might not be philosophically rigorous as arguments are, but she may have good reasons, maybe a religious experience that she had that she knows is real and not just hallucination or imagination. She trusts the proper authority, namely her pastor, who studied this stuff and us here at Catholic Answers. And she has reasonable belief by looking at the universe and thinking, hey, that gives me good reason to think for an intelligent designer behind it. So those are reasons that are rational. And so she's not necessarily socially conditioned, right? She would be believing in God based upon some reasons. And then finally, Sai, I would just say this. I think the tables can be turned on our atheist friend here who's posing this obstacle to belief in God. And we can say, well, wait a minute. What about your atheism? Isn't it possible that your atheism is socially conditioned? And thus you only believe your atheism because you're conditioned by the growing popularity of atheism within our popular culture. So see how the sword kind of cuts both ways? So you use it to try and attack the theists and saying you're believing in God because you're socially conditioned. But at the same time, it can cut the other way and say, well, you're an atheist because you're socially conditioned. Now, I'm not going to make that argument. I'm just trying to say that his argument is just as problematic for himself. But I would take a step back and say, you know, let's not even look at that argument. Just simply tell me, why do you think there is no God? Or why do you think you don't know that there is a God or not? So what's the problem with the arguments, etc.? So those are a few ways in which we can help someone overcome that obstacle about belief in God being socially challenged. And then the other obstacle, I know I can't spend too much time on it here, but I actually address this in my book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. I have a chapter in chapter 12 where I walk you through strategies and how to help somebody overcome the obstacle concerning the apparent fact that only reasonable people, smart people, believe in God. And that just simply is not true. I mean, we could challenge the underlying assumption side and say, well, wait a minute. Regardless of how many smart people believe or reject God, it really doesn't matter, right? I mean, because we don't necessarily believe something to be true only based upon the fact that a lot of smart people say it is true, because they could just simply be wrong, right? And so we have to be careful there. But nevertheless, it is reasonable and rational that if you don't have the intellectual chops to sift through all the arguments, you got to trust somebody at some time, right? And so I think I'm sympathetic to that. But what I point out in my book is that the stats saw actually concerning belief among scientists and philosophers actually favors theism. In fact, according to the NAS, according to some stats, 51% of scientists within the United States believe that God or some higher power exists. Now, that's concerning all scientists within the United States. And concerning philosophers, 72%, a great majority of philosophers of religion, that is, 72% believe that God exists, some form of theism. And those are the people that who are competent to pontificate on the matter of whether God exists, because these are philosophers of religion whose specialty is in this topic, right? And so based upon those numbers, if we're going to believe in God based upon the majority of reasonable and smart people, well, then that would actually favor theism as opposed to atheism. So, and I point out more detail. I give more details in my book as far as I actually list. I give a list of all of the really, really, really smart people. It's both, smart scientists within our history who professed some sort of belief in God. And many of those scientists were religious clergymen. So,
888-318-7884, the number. Carlo Broussard, our guest, and we're going to try to help you overcome obstacles to belief in God, whether those obstacles are your own or someone else's. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884, and lots of interest in prayer right now. Lots of people, probably many of us, turning to prayer in ways that we had not imagined we would be a month or two ago. Whether it's our habit to pray or not, we're praying about things, for things, and about people and for people that we had not thought about. And we've got a free book we want to give you about prayer. It's called 20 Answers Prayer. It's part of the 20 Answers series here at Catholic Answers. And we're giving away the ebook version of it for free. So you can read it on your computer, your phone, wherever you read ebooks. Just go to shop.catholic.com. Look for the banner at the top of the page and download your free copy of 20 Answers Prayer at shop.catholic.com.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy. A brand new episode of our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus, is now available. Check it out at catholicanswersfocus.com or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. In this week's episode, we tackle a situation that has become very real in this time of coronavirus. Join us as we talk with Father Hugh Barber about how and why to make a spiritual communion if you can't get to Mass. Check out this week's conversation with Father Hugh Barber and get access to past episodes at CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Father Robert Spitzer.
First of all, you will get a much deeper awareness of your faith, much deeper awareness of the evidence for your faith, explanations of tough theological issues, how science and reason and faith come together, and above all, a deeper awareness of how to practice your faith and how to live it.
Father Spitzer's Universe with Father Robert Spitzer, Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Just go over the rules again one time for those of you who are maybe joining us for the first time. Maybe your schedule has changed and now you're availing yourself of the opportunity to see what happens on Catholic Answers Live. You can call whether you're Catholic or not. You can call whether you believe in God or not. You can call no matter who you are or where you are. You just got to dial 888-318-7884. And our topic this hour is overcoming obstacles to belief in God. Our guest is Carlo Broussard. And up first this hour is Emmanuel in Tulsa, Oklahoma, listening on 94.9 FM. Emmanuel, you there with us? No.
Oh, no.
I'm there.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, that's good. I'm sorry we woke you up out of the nap like that. It's I know that's hard to be startled like that, but go ahead, Emmanuel.
I'm sorry. It's crazy with the kids at home.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah. Everybody's struggling with that. Fair enough. Go ahead with your question.
So, what kind of evidence can we give to an atheist about the existence of God? So somebody who is at least open to listening to evidence.
Person is open. They're open to hearing the evidence. They just want you to tell them what's the evidence.
Okay. Well, Emmanuel, I think there are two kinds of evidence that we could give. We could employ arguments that use evidence from contemporary science So, like, for example, the evidence from contemporary cosmology concerning the fine-tuning, say, for the initial conditions of matter and energy at our Big Bang, and the fine-tuning of the universal constants, the fixed numerical quantities that basically govern the laws of our physical cosmos, right? And we could use that as our starting point and reason to the reasonableness of an intelligent designer behind or responsible for such fine-tuning. Or you could look at contemporary cosmology and the evidence for an absolute beginning of time and physical reality, not only of our universe, but even also the hypothetical multi-universe. And evidence for that would be like, for example, the Bordova-Lincoln-Goo theorem, the BVG theorem. And from that, we would employ philosophy to say, well, if contemporary science suggests there's an absolute beginning of time and physical reality, this is known as the Clam argument, well, then that would necessitate a creator outside of our physical time and time, space and matter. And so whatever begins to exist has a cause outside of itself. The universe begins to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause. Now, for resources for that kind of argumentation, I would direct you to the work of Dr. William Lane Craig. He is a Christian apologist, a non-Catholic Christian apologist, but he does very good work on that. I would also direct you to the work of Father Robert Spitzer and the Majus Center at majuscenter.com and his book, New Proofs for the Existence of God, where he goes through these sorts of arguments that employ the scientific evidence in order to reason to the reasonableness that God exists. So that's a first kind of evidence, evidence from contemporary science that we can employ. And I think, Emmanuel, this can be helpful for someone who is more scientifically inclined intellectually as opposed to being inclined to engage in the perennial philosophy of Aristotle and Plato, finding its climax in the writings of St. Thomas Aquinas. However, if the person you're talking to, Emmanuel, is willing to roll up their sleeves and geek out a little bit in some good old-fashioned philosophy, well, then we could employ the philosophical evidence for God's existence. And these would be philosophical arguments that take things of our common human experience, such as motion in the world, or even change itself, right? The change and motion are sometimes traditionally in philosophy interchangeable. Or we could take the very fact that things exist. We could take the fact that there are degrees of perfection among things. My wife is better and more good, right? And a better being, a higher being than the rose bush outside or the flower bed in our yard, right? We could use that as a starting point. Or the fact that things or their activities aim at certain ends or goals, like an acorn being aiming at naturally producing an oak tree. So, Emmanuel, what philosophers do is they take these sorts of things in our common human experience and they're inquiring as to what is necessary, metaphysically speaking, absolutely speaking, for change to exist. For things to exist, period, for there to be degrees of perfection, of goodness within the world, and for there to be the activities of things aiming at certain ends or goals, like the acorn aiming at an oak tree. And what these philosophers conclude with is that there must be a cause or a reality that is not moved, but is the ultimate cause and that which is responsible for all motion. That reality which is not caused to exist, but is existence itself and thus has the power to give existence to creatures, right? Things outside of himself, itself, that there must be a reality that is ultimately good, perfectly good, being itself, that accounts for the fact that there are degrees of being or goodness or perfection within the world, and that there's a reality such that is not directed in its causal activity to any specific end, but directs all other things to specific ends in their activities, like the acorn producing an oak tree. And these sorts of arguments, Emmanuel, are embodied best, I think, in the writings of St. Thomas Aquinas, particularly his Five Ways, which are in summary form in his Summa Theologiae. But you can check out philosophers such as, for example, popular Catholic philosopher Dr. Edward Fazer in his book Aquinas. It's either For Beginners or Beginner's Guide, I can't remember the subtitle, where he articulates these five ways and defends them. But Emmanuel, you might also want to check out Dr. Fazer's book, Five Proofs of the Existence of God, where he gives five proofs from various philosophical proofs for God's existence from different writers, one from Aquinas, one from Gottfried Leibniz, one from Augustine. And that would be a great help for you as well. And one last resource, Emmanuel, you got to check out a podcast of my good friend John DeRosa, Classical Theism. Just go to classicaltheism.com, and he has a host of top-notch scholars and philosophers who walk you through the evidence for God. So what do you think about that, Emmanuel? I know that's a lot, but what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot. I need to take time to organize all of that and select.
Well, why don't we send Emmanuel a copy of Carlo's book, Overcoming Obstacles? Prepare the Way.
Yeah,
and then because I think you'll find a more extended opportunity to meditate on these there in the book. I'm going to continue moving, Emmanuel, because there are lots of folks who would like to pose their obstacles to Carlo.
Yes, I will say this for Emmanuel. In my book, I do give a philosophical argument for God's existence, as well as some arguments that employ that scientific evidence that I was talking about. So thank you for that, Si.
Oh, you're welcome. Alex in Farmington, New Mexico, listening on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 130, EWTN Channel 130 on Sirius XM. Alex, your question for Carlo.
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
My question is, I see constantly atheists attacking Christians on like YouTube, TikTok, and other social media. And the two things that I consistently notice that they argue about, and I was hoping that I could hang up and then listen on the radio if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay. The two things that I see atheists attacking our beliefs on is blaming the Christian church for all the religious wars in history. And that, you know, if we got rid of Christianity, that basically the world would be at peace. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is they keep throwing out the coronavirus and other things, saying that, you know, if God was real, why does he allow bad things to happen? If you could please address those two issues, I would really humbly appreciate it. And I thank you both very much.
Right. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so concerning the violence, the alleged violence that religions have led to, first of all, we have to take a step back and we have to ask ourselves the question, okay, does it follow that, so their conclusion is we need to get rid of religion. Religion is bad. And what's the premise? Why are they thinking that? Well, some religions have led to, or religions have, religions lead to conflict and violence. Well, when we take a step back, we ask, okay, well, do all religions in and of themselves entail the promotion of violence? Or is it possible that only some religions in their principles entail the promotion of violence? And whenever you do a survey of religions and what they believe, you come to the conclusion, well, it's only some. Some religions, in their very principles, encourage violence and propagation of their religion by the sword. But other religions, for example, Christianity, does not entail that in its very principles, okay? The principles themselves. And so now, okay, well, then the next question is, well, let's say that you have in Christian history some Christians who cause a lot of violence and conflict. And that is the case, even within our Catholic history, right? But then we ask the question, okay, well, is that violence, once again, following from the very principles of the religion? Or is it due to the fact that these certain members in the religion are failing to live up to the principles of the religion themselves? And for us as Catholics, it's the latter. Yes, there have been Catholics who have failed to live up to their Christian calling by Jesus Christ in how we are to promote our faith. But that, Alex, in no way takes away from the truth of the religion itself. So we can't judge the religion itself based upon those who fail to live up to what the religion teaches to be good and true. So that's my first thoughts on that. And on the other side of the break, I'll pick it back up.
Carlo Broussard is our guest. Our topic, overcoming obstacles to belief in God. If you've got an obstacle of your own or one from someone else you'd like some help with, 888-318-7884.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Every Catholic has heard the challenge. How can you believe that? Don't you know the Bible says? It's a challenge we have to meet. If we can't reconcile apparent contradictions between Scripture and Catholic teaching, how can our faith survive? And if we can't answer our Protestant brothers and sisters, how will they ever come to embrace the fullness of the faith? In Meeting the Protestant Challenge, apologist Carlo Broussard gives you the knowledge and tools you need to answer 50 of the most common Bible-based objections to Catholicism. Be prepared to give an answer. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Challenge today by calling 844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Carlo Broussard, our guest this hour. Carlo is the author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. He's the author. That's not the only book he's the author of, but it's the most relevant one today because we're talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in God. When we left, Alex had asked, and then he had gone off to listen through the radio, but he had asked about finding the Catholic, I guess, the argument against God because, well, for example, first, the Catholic Church has done so much violence. And the second one you wanted to address had to do with the coronavirus.
Yes. Just a couple of more thoughts, though, on that previous obstacle concerning, well, I'm not going to be Catholic or any sort of attacks against the Catholic Church because of violence. And notice, Cy, how it's atheists who are posing this challenge, right? But one thought comes to mind is this. Well, even if it is true and you don't want to be a Catholic because the Catholic Church has done some bad things in its history, well, it doesn't follow from that that God doesn't exist. God still may exist. And from the atheist's perspective, the Catholic Church just might be some group that is messed up, right?
Yeah,
and so
right.
They still have to address the God question, whether God exists or not. So that's what one thought just to follow up on that previous obstacle. Now, concerning the obstacle of the coronavirus in the face of the question of whether or not God exists. This is basically one example that we could include under the broad umbrella of the problem of evil, right? If the question is God unjust or unloving or not good for permitting what we call in philosophy natural evil in this physical cosmos, then the answer is no, God is not unjust for doing that. And the reason is because natural or physical evils that arise within our physical cosmos, so it's important to note that they're part and parcel of the material world. Inasmuch as you have a material universe with material things, the goodness of one thing is going to curtail the goodness of another. So, for example, the goodness of the lion and the flourishing activity of the lion is going to entail the curtailing of the goodness of the gazelle, right?
Yes.
So, too, the same with viruses, unfortunately. That's the way the material world works. The flourishing activity of a virus is going to entail the curtailing of the goodness of those things that the virus infects, such as us, if we have the virus, right? So notice how physical evil and suffering arises, natural physical suffering arises from, it's part and parcel of, it piggybacks on the material physical cosmos. So the question is God unjust for permitting such physical evil? And the answer is no, because in order for God to stop such physical evil, that would require a miracle. That would require God giving something to the physical cosmos, which includes us physical beings as well, something that's over and above our natural way of being and our natural way of existence, such as existing as corporeal realities. And God is not unjust for not giving what is not our due, right? God is only bound to himself to give us what is our due, given our natures. But to preserve us from physical evil is something above our natures. And God is not bound to give us what is above our natures. So that's if the question is God unjust? The answer is no. So you might classify that as the intellectual problem. And in this particular case, the intellectual problem of evil concerning God's permission of viruses to exist. Now, still, someone might counter sigh and say, well, that seems to be unloving and contrary to God's goodness. Well, it's not, because God is perfectly just in this situation. But we also must add that God permits such evils, in this case, physical evil, only insofar as he intends and wills to bring about a greater good that this permitted evil is an occasion for. Now, this is where it gets hard, Cy. This is where the emotional problem comes into play, because we as finite creatures bound by space and time, we cannot know the reason. We might be able to speculate of some reasons that God might bring about, but ultimately speaking, the bottom line is that we don't have access to the infinite knowledge of the divine intellect of God, right? So we might not be able to know that reason or that greater good that God intends to bring about on the occasion of the permitted evil. And that's where it gets hard. That's where it's hard to swallow that pill, because we want to know it, but we can't. And so, but just because we can't know it, Cy, that doesn't mean there is no greater good. If God is infinite in power, as we say he is, well, then there is no good that he cannot bring about from the occasion of the permitted physical evil, in this case, the coronavirus. So we can trust both on the natural level, sort of a natural trust philosophically that God is infinite in power, but even more so supernaturally with the supernatural virtue of hope, we can trust that God in his divine plan is ordering this permitted physical evil to some greater good that we just simply might not have access to know yet.
Again, Alex dropped so he could hear the your answer on the radio. But Alex, thank you very much for this question. If you have an obstacle to belief in God, whether it's your own or someone else's that you'd like some help addressing, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Up next is Joe in San Diego, right here in San Diego, watching on YouTube Live. Joe, your question for Carlo.
Yeah, I understand the arguments for God's existence, the five arguments. They make sense. They prove the existence of God.
Okay.
I don't understand how you can make the connection that God is Jesus in an absolute way. It seems like the only arguments that Jesus is God are historical, probabilistic arguments, as in you're saying it's most likely the case Jesus is God. But that's not satisfying to a rigorous rationalist.
Okay, so you are correct, Joe, in saying that we're operating in two different fields of knowledge here. So in employing the philosophical arguments for God's existence, we can have what St. Thomas would call, following Aristotle, scientific knowledge. And what he means by that is knowledge that we have based upon first principles of knowledge, first principles of reason, the principle of non-contradiction, principle of causality, sufficient reason, etc. So within the field of philosophy, we can have that absolute knowledge, right? And to know metaphysically that God exists. When we are in the domain of history, right? There, our certitude within that domain is less than the metaphysical certainty that we can have in philosophy. So it is true to say that our knowledge, historically speaking, of the historical facts of Jesus' life, the historical claims of Jesus' life, are not as absolutely or not as certain as we can have in the realm of philosophy. But nevertheless, it is historical knowledge. And we can say, as the Catechism does, that these things concerning Jesus, once we go through the investigation, are historical facts. And based on those historical facts, which give us justified belief, like we can reasonably believe that these things happened in the past. We can't absolutely know it philosophically because our belief is based upon testimony, right? We are believing. That's what belief is. I mean, you're assenting to something based upon the testimony of another. So that's different than knowing it yourself in the realm of philosophy based upon first principles, which is not belief, but it's knowledge, right? In the absolute sense. So it is belief. That is to say, we're assenting to these things concerning Jesus based upon the credible testimony of others and thus concluding these are historical facts. And then responding based upon those historical facts concerning whether or not we're going to give our life over to Jesus Christ. So it is true that we are operating in different realms. But think about this, Joe. Just because you can't have the absolute knowledge in the historical realm as you can in the philosophical realm, it doesn't follow from that we can't be justified in our belief that Jesus existed, he said what he did, and he rose from the dead, right? Because if we're going to follow that line of thought, Joe, well, then we're going to have to reject all of history. Because all historical knowledge is knowledge based upon the testimony of others, things that we didn't experience with our own sensory powers ourselves, and so we can't have absolute certitude concerning those things. So I think this sort of argument, Joe, undermines all of historical knowledge. And as my boss and our CEO here at Catholic Answers, Chris Check, is standing in the studio there, he's going to say that's a no-go because he loves history and he's a historian himself.
Thank you very much, Joe, for the call. We have to take a quick break. Before we head to that break, if you haven't enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics and, you know, you've had enough of Netflix and whatnot right now, well, the first module has been available for a little over 3 months, and students have really loved it. We've got just fantastic feedback on it. That's the one with Jimmy Akin doing his introduction to apologetics. Enrollment is approaching 600 students and climbing by leaps and bounds. It really is. It keeps going up. I know it's well over 20 countries now in which people have taken that course. So we're offering an introductory price that saves you $30 if you sign up right now. But don't procrastinate. It'll go away before too long. And the second module in the course, Moral Apologetics, taught by Trent Horn, should be available before the end of this month, quite possibly as soon as next week. So keep your eyes out for that. Just go to schoolofapologetics.com, schoolofapologetics.com for more information and to sign up for your apologetics courses.
You know what Catholic radio is? It's training for the troops. It's a interaural of the ear boot camp. The folks who listen, who grow in their faith, grow in charity, grow in all the virtues, they then go out and exert an influence far beyond just themselves. Catholic radio has an exponential effect for bringing people deeper into the faith.
Dr. Ray Guarendi thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Hey, don't forget tomorrow, 2 hours, open forum. We're going to return to the open forum format tomorrow. So if you've got questions about the Catholic faith, about Catholic people, beliefs, got questions about Christianity, the Bible, maybe more general questions about religion or morality, all that's welcome during open forum. And if you're new to Catholic Answers, you should know anybody's welcome to call. Anybody is welcome to call 888-318-7884, the number. Right now, we've got Carlo Broussard with us. Carlo's book that we're kind of referring to this hour is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And right now, we're trying to help folks overcome obstacles to belief in God. If you are a person who has such an obstacle and you'd like to talk about it, you're welcome to call. And if you know somebody who's got such an obstacle and you'd like to help them with it, you're also welcome to call 888-318-7884. Nancy in Chicago, Illinois is up next. Nancy's watching on Facebook Live. Glad to have you, Nancy. Your question for Carlo.
Hi there. A friend of mine gave me a book called The Stone Reader, which I was not familiar with, but pointed to an article by Gary Gutting named Does It Matter Whether God Exists? And it seems like he kind of argues, even if we can say that he does definitely exist, what does it matter? We're not guaranteed salvation. And the actually kind of piggybacking on the problem of evil, that the problem of evil is just solved by an appeal to our ignorance. So, kind of, you know, not knowing everything. So I was just wondering if, Carlo, if you could kind of talk a little bit about that, about what does it matter and kind of the significance of God as it relates to evil, which you kind of did already.
Okay. Yeah, Nancy, I actually have a DVD called Why God Still Matters. So I would highly encourage you to check that out at shop.catholic.com and get a hold to that. But one of the things that I point out in the talk, Nancy, and I also point out in my book, Prepare the Way, I think ultimately it matters because without God, we would not exist. So whenever you go through the philosophical investigation, you come to discover, Nancy, that we are so radically dependent upon God's very causal activity right here and right now, such that if he were to stop willing me to exist, I would literally lapse into nothingness. If he were to leave me to myself, I would lapse into nothingness because of my very self, of my own nature, I don't have existence. The very thing that distinguishes me from absolute nothingness, right? Existence itself. I don't have the act of existence of my very nature, my essence, right? And so it requires this ultimate reality that we call God to be giving me my existence here and now in such a way that an analogy would be like the light that's shining upon the table here in the studio is right here and right now caused by the lights in the studio shining. And if we were to flip the light switch off, right, there would be no light shining on the studio table here. Similarly, if God were to stop willing us in existence, we would lapse into nothingness and stop existing. So that's one, that's a pretty good reason, I think, why God matters, is because he's the reason why I exist right here and right now and am distinguished from nothing. It also matters too, Nancy, that God exists because in God alone do we find our complete satisfaction, what we call authentic human happiness, perfect and complete human happiness. And St. Thomas Aquinas does a beautiful job on this in his work, the Summa Theologiae, where he goes through all of the various things, all of the various goods of this life that can give us some forms of happiness, some kinds of happiness, but they're all limited and they're always leaving us to desire more goodness, right? And given that God is infinite goodness itself, he is that than which nothing more good can be desired, right? Well, then when we come to possess God and be united to God, we're going to be completely satisfied. And it is only in him that we can find our complete satisfaction or our complete happiness. So God matters for the sake of authentic, perfect, and complete human happiness. Now, with regard to the problem of evil, I would say God does matter with regard to the problem of evil because it is God and God alone, Nancy, that can bring about greater goods from permitted, the occasion of permitted evils within the world, whether they be physical or moral, such as sin or suffering. Without God, well, then you would have no greater good being able to come from these permitted evils. Everything would end literally in nothingness, and there would be no hope, no purpose, no meaning whatsoever, no light whatsoever in the darkness of evil within our world and within our experience. And so I think the atheistic worldview gives a bleak view of reality as opposed to the theistic worldview. So God does matter to rectify all of the evil and to redeem it in what we call as Christians heaven and that glory to come.
Okay, Nancy.
All right. Sounds good. Three solid reasons. I like it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to hear that Gary Gutting from Notre Dame University is making sure we don't believe.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention that, Si. I had not heard of the book, so I can't comment on the book itself, right?
He used to run the philosophy website for the New York Times, but I don't know if it's still running. Yeah. You wonder about Notre Dame University. But Bianca in San Antonio, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are up next. You got an obstacle that you want to share with Carla?
Yes, I have three, and I'll try to go through it as fast as I can. The first one is when it comes to determining between good and evil, isn't that just common sense? Like, we don't need a church to tell us that. Two, I know that I said earlier that I'm kind of pulling away from the church because of all the corruption, but I felt like I used the wrong word. It's not necessarily corruption that how I would describe it. It's more like it just looks like the Catholic Church is just too easy to break. And what I mean by that is like the burning of Notre Dame, the Easter church shootings a couple of years ago, the clergy sex abuse scandal. And right now with the churches closing, it feels like Jesus lied when he said that no evil would destroy his church. Because, like I said, from everything that I've seen and what I listed, it just feels like it's too, like I said, the church is too, it's too fragile, it's too easy to break.
Okay.
And the third one is, sorry, because it's a lot on my mind, but
yeah.
I think what I mentioned was that, that I just, I'm to the point where it's like atheism or Satanism looks better than being Catholic. So it's like, why should I stay?
Okay. All right. Well, that is a lot, Bianca. And so let me see if I can help you out here. Okay. So number one, you asked, can we know good and evil by common sense without the church? Or as you put it, we can know good and evil by common sense and we don't need the church. The answer to that question is yes, Bianca. I don't know if that surprises you or not, but we can know what is good and what is evil by the natural light of human reason. That's called moral philosophy, okay? Now, Jesus gave us the church in order to help us out, Bianca, because even concerning those natural truths about what we need to do that's good as human beings, what we shouldn't do that's bad as human beings, even though we can come to know those things on our own without the church and without God's revelation, well, God helps us out and reveals those truths to us supernaturally, for example, in the Bible, through Moses in the Old Testament, and even through Jesus and Jesus' teaching. And then Jesus gives us the church to help us, Bianca, to be preserved in those truths of good and evil, lest we go astray. Because, face it, Bianca, I don't know about you, but sometimes I make mistakes. Sometimes I can mess up. Sometimes I get it right. Sometimes I don't. And so Jesus gave us the church, Bianca, to help us out, so that we're not left to our own fallible powers of our own reasoning of trying to figure all this stuff out. So it's a help. And so some people might say, well, it's just a crutch for the weak. Well, what's wrong with a crutch when you are weak? I'd say it's pretty darn good. I like having a crutch. If I got a broken leg, it helps me get around. So too, Jesus gave us a church to help us to know good and evil, even those things that we can know by ourselves, by our own natural light of human reason. Okay. Now, secondly, you said the Catholic Church seems easy to break, and you list a variety of things such as the burning of the church. Well, yeah, churches are subject to things within our cosmos that can destroy them. Okay. But guess what, Bianca? The visible church itself, the church building, that's not the church that Jesus established. That Jesus established a community of believers in him united by something that no thing in the physical cosmos can touch, namely grace, okay? And it's that grace that unites us to Jesus and constitutes this church, his church, in the invisible dimension. You talked about the clergy sex abuse scandal, and we affirm with you, we're right with you, Bianca, and we say, yes, that is wrong. It is a scandal, and unfortunately, it's leading many people to question their faith and even leave the Catholic Church. And we condemn such evil. But notice, Bianca, these individuals are failing to live up to the standard that Jesus calls them to live up to and calls you, Bianca, and myself to live up to, and all of us to live according to what is true, good, beautiful, and holy. Those individuals did not. That's called sin, okay? And we condemn that, and we hope that they repent. And so Jesus promised in Matthew 16:18, that the gates of the netherworld would not prevail against his church. That did not mean, Bianca, that the evil forces of this world would not conquer visible churches and local churches within the world. That's happened in history. But what it does mean is that Satan will never prevail against this church concerning the church officially teaching error, concerning matters of God's revelation and what's true and what's not true, what's good and what's evil. And it also means that the church will always be present on earth in some form until the end of the age. So that local church, this local church here, the church in this country, all the churches might shut down. But we know based upon Jesus' promise, Bianca, that the church itself will never cease to exist on the face of the earth in the form that he constituted it with, okay? And then finally, atheism or Satanism, well, we would have to have a little bit longer conversation, Bianca, to talk about the claims of Jesus and whether they're reasonable to believe it or not. Because if they are, well, then we shouldn't embrace atheism and we shouldn't embrace Satanism, because Satan is the opponent of Jesus, but Jesus says he has victory over Satan. So
Bianca, I wish we had more time, and I'll tell you what, we do have more time tomorrow, so I would be willing to continue this conversation with you, with Jimmy here tomorrow, because it's very serious what you're talking Amen. About, and Carlo gave good answers, but it's the kind of thing that might require some dialogue that we don't have time for at the moment. So if you have time, give us a call tomorrow, and we'll continue the conversation. Carlo Broussard has been our guest. You should look for his book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Carlo, thanks very much.
Hey, thank you, Si. It was a joy, my friend, as always.
It always is. And we'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.